You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Well, hello, Scott. Hello, and welcome to the next episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. I'm clearly making this up as I go along.
Good evening.
How are you?
You are tonight.
Yes.
I'm not bad, thank you. Not bad. A reasonably easy week this week.
Have you?
Yeah, well, good. I say easy. It's not easy, but, you know, it's, yeah. A week at home this week, which is good.
That's nice. Make sure it keeps the natives in order and check, doesn't it?
It does, especially because it's SATs week, so, you know, we've got SATs going on. So.
Oh, talk to me about SATs. So. How's SATs going in Cassin Rennie Towers?
Well, it's actually getting easier as the week goes on, because I think the stress leading up to it, or the pressure, because it's very new to us. The older two were never like. Well, I don't know what the word is, but they were never kind of hung up on it. They didn't feel the same way about it as Jacob does. And he feels very responsible for the results of the school, which I think is quite interesting.
Where's he picked that up from? Surely the school shouldn't be telling him that that's what the SATs are for.
No, I don't think they are. I think it's his, his, because he is like that. That's exactly what he's like. Bless him. So, he feels he has a responsibility. But as the week's gone on, he's relaxed a bit more. We saw a return of a number of behaviours that we saw before we started our therapy sessions and stuff. So,
yeah. Often the case,
no CPV, I'm pleased to report.
That's good.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like a, what's his name, isn't it? Regression? I can't get my words out tonight. Regression. That's the one, regression.
Oh, I read that in a book once.
So, but okay. They finish tomorrow. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord.
Finish today. SATs are finished today, aren't they?
Oh, are they finished today?
Oh. Yeah.
That's probably why tonight has been very light in the Cassin Rennie household.
I can't believe I've revealed that huge gap in your parenting knowledge live.
Yeah, I know. I'm just rubbish. Yeah. Never mind.
I think
I don't care.
You just embracing
just
that rubbishness.
If they're over, they're over.
It's a starting point for you getting better, Scott.
I do.
Yeah, it's like a therapy session.
It's like I say, you cannot be perfect at everything. Yeah, no. You can't be perfect at everything. I'm perfect at most of other things. Yeah.
No, Lottie's.
We'll leave
been,
that one there.
Yeah, Lottie's been doing her SATs as well, and Lottie's there was a wee frisson of tension over the weekend, and then she couldn't care less, and she was really excited that they put a breakfast club on and there were sausage sandwiches. That was the her primary.
That's important
stuff when you're 11 years old.
I think that's. It is, yeah, and I think that's something we did here as well, was actually giving them breakfast, regardless of whether they'd have breakfast or not at home, which I think was a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
Although I do worry because Jacob is quite gluttonous, so, you know, he has a reputation of puking up everywhere.
Oh, that would...
Because he, obviously, would be hilarious, wouldn't it, over the SATs.
Oh, how we laughed, No. I do think that I've been really pondering school of late, and I know it's a rich vein of conversation in relation to adoption and fostering, but I've just increasingly for some of my kids just thinking, this stuff just doesn't matter. And that's a terrible thing to admit as a social worker and all my training and profession thinking, but when you're 25, you can go back and get your GCSEs. You will only be 11 once.
Exactly.
You'll only have that kind of developmental stage and kind of the brain altering and all of that kind of stuff. You only get one pass at that. But actually, GCSEs.
You do. You only.
And
I know.
I'd like to confess now that I didn't get my GCSE in English. So there you go. And I do all right.
Oh, I did wonder.
Yeah. It's being noted. Anyway, it's fostering and it's foster care fortnight, but I've not seen very much about foster care fortnight. Have you seen much?
Do you know what? I have to say, this week I've been kind of absent in the main from social media. So I haven't seen too much about it. But even the stuff that I have seen, there's not been a lot of it. So yeah, it's a bit disappointing, really.
Yeah, it seems like
a damp squib.
By accident, we've become the poster boys for Foster Care Fortnight.
Yeah.
The flagship means of getting the message out. Anyway, no, me neither. I've not seen very much. Yeah. Anyway, so I, through a long, convoluted chain of events, spoke to a man called Harvey Gallagher, who's the chief executive of the nationwide NAPFA, which is Nationwide Association of Fostering Providers. Mm. And he's a really interesting man. Slightly concerned that he was clearly very clever. And his questions and answers were much... I was thinking, he's way beyond me. But I think I managed to cover it up in the conversation. But you can be the judge of that. So I shall put it on.
Oh, you know I judge.
Oh, I know. In your heart and mind and word, you are just a fuzzball of judgment. Right, I'll put it on and then we can have a chit-chat. Harvey, it's great to speak to you. Can you give me a brief introduction of who you are and what you do?
Okay, I'm Harvey Gallagher. I'm the Chief Executive of the Nationwide Association of Foster Providers. And we're a not-for-profit organisation that campaigns for independent and voluntary fostering organisations across England, Scotland, Wales, but most importantly, and for the children that they care for.
Right, and how long has the NAFP been running?
NAFP started almost 9 years ago, actually, by a group of independent foster providers in the Midlands in England, because they felt they needed an extra organisation, perhaps to the others that were already around, working in foster care, being representative of children and carers, because some of the issues that they were facing in trying to do their jobs for their children as well as possible were specific to independent organisations. They felt like they needed an organisation that would campaign about those specific issues.
Right. So you have, I know that you cover the whole of the UK, don't you? So you speak to foster care organisations who obviously are influenced by their foster carers right across the country. So a really big question, how is foster care doing? Is it working?
Oh, that's a really tough question. Well, do you know what? I think the answer is probably yes and no, depending on which part of it you're looking at and which level that you look at. I think in the most obvious sense, children with foster carers, living with their foster carer, well-supported foster carers, the placement is right, the child is a good fit for the carer is a good fit for the child. By and large, it works really well. So in that sort of sense, in the obvious sense, foster carers and children, foster care works. By and large, it works really well. I guess the part of things that work the poorest for me, I think, are all the administration, processes, policies, things that go around that. Because I think we've sort of ended up in a position where we've got a system which actually should be about achieving the best thing for children. And everything else we do should only be aimed at meeting that end. We've ended up with this kind of corporate structure of policies, organisation, money, protection, risk, which seems to be mitigated against that in lots of ways. So you know, how you recruit carers, who we recruit, how we train them, how we know which children to place with them. We've got this kind of ad hoc system for the way children ultimately end up with a foster carer. So probably once a child is with a foster carer, everybody's doing their damnedest to make that work really well. And by and large, it does work. Yeah. But I think a lot of the systems and the processes around that don't work very well at all. And actually, if we achieve something, it's probably despite that, because there's actually a lot of good people working in the system.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was speaking to a foster carer today, and she was saying, it's not the children. The children are not the issue. I came into fostering to look after children, and I understand that those are children who are vulnerable and all of the stuff that can come with that. As she said, it's the system. She said, this year I've had 5 supervising social workers. And you kind of think, crikey, that's one every however many weeks. You know, it's one every 10 weeks. That's shocking. Yeah. And so do you think that that is an issue that we're addressing, or is that, I know that there's
there seems to be stuff happening. Are you involved in that, in the considering those systems and the state of fostering?
I mean, there are. There's the Education Committee in England has got part of the way through an inquiry into foster care before the general election was called, which means those things get disbanded and then start up with a new government. And the Department for Education have started a fostering stocktake in England, led by Sir Martin Murphy. And in Scotland, we've got a review of the care system, and in Wales, we've got various other kind of national developments going on. So there is all sorts of look at the system going on. I think the thing that strikes me, in all honesty, is I feel a little bit pessimistic about the ability of those things to achieve something, probably for two reasons. Excuse me. I sometimes think foster care is an evidence-free zone. So you get a lot of people who've got very strong opinions about the way things are, the way things should be, the things that are wrong. When I dig into their opinions, I struggle to find out how they can really justify that that is the case. So I guess the difficult thing for these national inquiries and stock takes and the like is that you've got a lot of really strong voices, lots of people shouting about what they think is right and wrong, but not a lot of evidence to back up what's right. And if you're going to try and come up with whole system changes, which will take key people in the system and key organisations and key sectors with you, trying to balance all those vested interests is really pretty much of an impossible task. And the reason that doesn't give me the reason that I'm a little bit cynical about that is because, again, that strikes me as not really being about children and things that directly impact on their lives. So much it is about kind of politics with a small p, if you like. So I think watching stock taking England, I think we should be a literature review for that. And I don't know what it includes. It would strike me that you know, if I had to have a guess at what it would include, it might say there's loads of areas here that we don't know much about. So that might need to stretch that. But if Samartan area is going to come up with some recommendations in his stock taking, his recommendations can't be, we need to know more. He's going to have to come up with something more solid than that. And, you know, he's going to get lobbied by everybody about what should be it. And I don't envy him on trying to come up with something that will move things forward for children, yet reflect all of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tricky balancing act, isn't it? Because as you say, we can all point out what's wrong. But it's difficult to kind of say, hey, well, let's try this new model or that new model, or look at adjustments that people will agree on wholeheartedly.
Really hard. And a lot of the stuff I do is to do with the commissioning of foster care. So kind of, you know, the way the system works, how the money's spent, where children end up, like that sort of thing. And I often get asked the question, show us where the good commissioning is happening. And I have to say, hardly anywhere is usually my answer. And the evidence I give for that is that local authorities sort of kind of tend to review their commissioning system maybe every 3 or 4 years. And every 3 or 4 years, they usually do something different to what they've done the previous 3 or 4 years, which suggests to me they thought what they were doing wasn't really working very well. So in the most basic sense, how much we spend, whether it's the right amount to spend, and what it achieves for children when we spend it, isn't done very well.
Yeah, that's a real challenge, because things are constantly evolving, and I know the work I do is that the people we're working with is constantly changing and evolving and moving, and they're changing it to try and improve it or try to save money, or try to restructure to save money. So it's a complicated system, isn't it?
Indeed, and I think it's very difficult, and I think the cuts to local authority spending over the recent years have really coloured everything. So whatever worked well or didn't work well, say 5 years ago, 10 years ago, everything is coloured by the cuts now to local authorities. And I guess, you know, the different models of working, reorganising, you know, Doncaster Trust, Peterborough outsourcing some of its service, the Achieving for Children South London, all this stuff about structures. But actually, it seems to me, if you throw all the pieces up in the air and see where they land somewhere else, what you get in the meantime is chaos, and nobody knows whether it's working or not. In the meantime, there are still children in care. There are still children with foster carers trying to make their relationships work. They still need the support. All of that in this chaotic environment where everybody's views and direction and planning is coloured by we've got less money than we had before.
And that must, in that context, you've got foster carers who are being demoralised as they see that their support's being reduced. Or I often hear of people saying, well, they used to provide this, but now we don't get this. We used to get, you know, transport costs covered, they're not covered anymore. And it's constantly sort of nibbling at the edges of that stuff that helps foster carers.
It's a false economy, I would argue, as well, because, you know, the money you might save in cutting some transport costs from a group of foster carers is really tuppence halfpenny in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And actually, you demoralise that foster carer, so they don't do quite as good, they're quite as good for that young person as they used to be. Things break down, they need a bit more support, they need a longer gap before they're going to have another placement, they give up altogether. That stuff costs you a lot more money within a year, 18 months, 2 years, than the tuppence halfpenny you would have saved on the transport costs.
Yeah, and if you lose a foster carer, you've lost a foster carer. You can't, that's tens of thousands to get a foster carer back.
And years, because losing your experienced foster carers, they can't be replaced overnight.
No, absolutely. Sort of leading into that, where do you stand on the debate that's kind of raging, maybe too strong a word, that's probably bigging it up a bit, about the professionalisation of foster carers? What do you think?
That's a really good question. I think the word is causing us problems. So that's one thing. I think, coming up with some terminology that fits the role that we're describing is difficult. But I think the main problem is that foster care isn't a generic role or job, because children are different, but we need different foster carers to care for different children. So all foster carers aren't all doing the same task. And I think for some children who come into care and go to live with a foster carer, having somebody who cares for them, who loves for them, who's affectionate, who cooks dinner for them, who reads them a bedtime story, who helps them do, that's absolutely what they need. That kind of parent, if you like, that you might expect a good parent anywhere. And so that's really right for some. And I don't know that I'd call it professional. It's incredibly important. Isn't easy to get right. You need lots of help along the way. But I don't know if I'm professional. But for some children, that's what they need. Other children who have much, much greater challenges because of what's happened to them in the past, because all those things are stored up inside them, things are, for them, that kind of no parenting, to some extent, if you like, isn't going to be enough for them. Need something much more specialized than that. That some people would call a therapeutic approach. There might be other ways of thinking about it. That might be more akin to what we would think of as a professional role. So I think partly we get tied up in knots because foster care is not one thing. It's a number of different things.
So
I thought about it in that way. But, foster carers are doing this to earn money. So people have rent, mortgages, bills to pay. There's no getting away from that. That's how the world works. So there is a transaction here. That doesn't mean they don't care or love for children any less than because they receive money for it. So, we might want to unpick some of that as well. Lots of us who do roles where we're trying to help children, other adults, make the world a better place to live in, we're doing it for money because it's our job and we need to pay the bills. But we're far from doing it only for money, so we need to unpick that a little bit. But equally, where you're doing a task that is akin to a child psychiatrist, for goodness sake, or something like that, well, there is a part of your role that's professional.
I think it's, like you say, the language is really challenging for some people. And I heard a radio debate where there was a guy who was going through the fostering approval process, and he was adamant that you should do it for love, you should do it for love. And he's right. But to my mind, you do it for a year and then you may feel differently, because often I think that I don't care particularly about people's motivations. I care about the quality of their work. So if they're nurturing, caring, loving, safe, stable, therapeutic environment, their motivation is irrelevant. if they're providing all of the things they need to provide. And so we can get hung up on this kind of romanticized notion of doing it for the kids, you know, for the kids, for the kids. Good-hearted people.
And because it's in your own home, you know, you've got it, it's different, isn't it, because it's in your own home. I mean, you know, we don't throw the same sort of challenges at GPs or nurses or teachers or other people who have jobs in which care and love and close work and relationships with people are helping are really key part of it, because it's not in their own home. So that's part of the difference, I think, and why we struggle to get our heads around what the job is.
Yeah, that's a really valid point, because I think that we expect a lot of professional attitudes from foster carers. Increasingly I see that what's expected is the logs, the written work, the professional development, but then they'll be excluded from a meeting because we don't want to know what you think. And I even still I get that. You can't have it both ways. It's a complicated issue. So do you see that?
Yeah, I think.
Sorry. Do you see that as an issue that's going to.
Downside of including people is they'll tell you what they think, won't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Not always sure I want to hear what they think. I guess.
Indeed.
What do you actually see for the future of fostering? Because you work with independent foster care agencies, which often get a bad press. Which I, for good or bad reasons, but what do you see, if you could turn the clock forwards 20 years, what do you think fostering will be?
That's a really difficult question to answer. I mean, I think the independent sector as a whole has done a great job in improving quality and being innovative and being creative and filling in gaps. And some independent fostering organisations have ended up as the mainstream because the sector has kind of paved the way in some ways. And so we've ended up with this mixed provision of the way of services of all kinds. And the independent sector now, again, it's not a generic thing at all with every shape and size of organisation in the independent sector. And I think that's the strength of it. And again, it comes back to children, foster carers, people being different. It's right that we have different ways of doing things because it isn't one size fits all.
Yeah.
So I think the diversity in the independent sector is its strength. And I think the independent sector continues to prosper because overwhelmingly it offers really good care for children. You know, when you look at the, you know, Ofsted judgments, whatever you might think of them, are kind of the only independent marker we've got of how an organization is doing. Now you can't since Ofsted stopped offering a judgment on foster care for local authorities, you can't compare Ofsted and judgments for local authorities and independent fostering providers. But independent fostering providers get overwhelmingly, is it 87% or something like that, good or outstanding, and 1% or something are failing at Ofsted. So on the only kind of national marker we've got, they offer really good care for children. And so while they continue to that, I think they'll continue to prosper. And we've seen that, you know, the independent sector continues to grow. It's taken more than its share of all the additional children that have come into care and come into foster care. So I guess I see that continuing to be the case.
And do you think that the arguments that are used against the independence, which is a financial, it's predominantly a financial argument, is a very ill-informed debate, to my perspective, that you get a lot for your money. You get a supervising social worker, you get training, you get skills to foster, you get a Form F, you get all of this, but people just look at the baseline weekly figure. They don't see all the other back stuff that they get that a local authority would have to be paying for anyway.
It's another evidence-free zone, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I get thrown at me a lot is unit cost. So what's a unit cost? Now, in the first instance, you know, this is a sector where the Audit Commission, National Audit Office, and the government themselves have huge concerns about the way money is reported and how spending is reported. And the thing that's in common about what they all see is it's impossible to compare one form of care with another on the basis of the way the figures are reported. And anyway, what's a unit cost? Children aren't units of commodity, are they?
No.
We don't spend the same amount of money on every child because they have different needs, and some cost more and some cost less, and they cost more or less at different times. So the whole area of how much we spend is very uncertain. But worse than that, we don't even really know what we get from money when we spend it. So how can we say this costs too much and this is better when we don't really know what our money is buying us? And so that's what I go back to the Ofsted judgments for. What we do know about the independent sector is overwhelmingly it offers a really good standard of care for children. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I think if you said to a child, you know, what's the most important thing about your foster care placement, would they say whether or not the agency who the carer works for makes money or not? So I'm not saying that's not important, but what I am saying is what are the relative importances of these issues then?
Yeah, it is interesting because, like you say about the Ofsted inspection, it works really well in this sector. In that, what people don't realise, if you don't get good, most local authorities won't use you. It's almost a death knell on your business. So the market force is high quality. It's not a market force to make profit. So it's an interesting dynamic. It's self-selecting. Those that don't reach that quality mark will fall out of the marketplace.
Indeed. And local authorities spend huge amounts of money and staff time on procurement of foster care. So they're doing their damnedest all year round to try and negotiate the price, be competitive. So they're throwing all that at it to make sure that the prices charged are competitive.
Yeah.
Are they saying they don't do a good job?
Yeah. It's a really interesting debate. And I think that foster care is an area of, that there's a lot of people don't know an awful lot about, and the reality, the day-to-day work of foster carers. So any final thoughts? What would you like to tell me? This is your chance. Get the dirty water off your chest.
I mean, this is just my point of view. I think I'm lucky because I get to go around England, Scotland and Wales all year round, and I talk to some young people, I talk to care leavers, I talk to foster carers, I talk to foster carers, supervising social workers, I talk to fostering managers, I talk to fostering managers in local authorities and independent providers, I talk to commissioners, I talk to chief executives of organisations, I talk to directors of children's services. I'm in a really lucky position, I think, in how I get this kind of constant snapshot of everything that's going on. And I have to say, you know what, there's tons of good people working in the sector right across the board. And I suppose what gives me hope is that we'll continue to confound the reorganisations and systems and processes that are thrown at us and continue to do a good job for children.
That's great. That's a positive message. We will look after the children. Hey, well, thank you very much, Harvey, for giving me some of your time. And it's nice to speak to a fellow northeasterner and cyclist. It's a top guy.
Absolutely. Who's feeling rather chuffed about promotion issues, but we won't go into this.
Yeah, I'm blessed with the fact I don't understand football. I'm the only northeastern man who doesn't understand football. I'm almost like a social leper in the northeast. So, hey, thank you very much and look after yourself.
Pleasure. Thanks, Al. You too.
Well, there you go. That was Harvey Galligan. What did you think of that then? You like it?
I have to say, I'm quite impressed. Yeah. I don't know. It just kind of warmed to him.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I don't know. There's just something quite intriguing about him.
Yeah.
And he knows his onions. I'm sure I've said that before about other people, but he does seem to know his onions, which is probably why he does the job he does.
You often hear lots of really splashy kind of sensationalist headlines on, don't you, about foster care, and it's nice to talk to someone who's actually got quite a balanced view on that informed view.
I think you're right on that. It definitely balanced, because knows that there's kind of room for improvement, seems to know where that improvement needs to be, and the kind of foster care thing that's going to launch shortly through the DfE. I think he'll play quite an important part in that.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that this, he said it a few times, a phrase in relation to a couple of different things, but it was about this, there's no evidence for that. It's a kind of an evidence-free zone. I listened back to what we'd talked about and I thought it's an endless source of conversation is the stuff that's wrong with foster care. I'm sure you could give examples and I can.
but actually what works, and that's, there's not as much, and it's not as deeply tapped resource as what works. Where's the good stuff? So I came up with a lot of thought. I mean, what was the good stuff you saw when you were in foster care? Was the good stuff? Was it? I mean, what sort of experience? Looking back now, what was the overall experience?
Yeah. I mean, we touched on this briefly in the last one. I mean, our experience was generally positive in terms of her assessment and what have you. And I think that the opportunities to attend training and your kind of development as a foster carer, so your CPD training, I think that was hugely positive. And I think that actually, I mean, we were with a private fostering agency.
Right.
And, you know, I know that that is part of fostering kind of regs and stuff is about training and what have you. But I enjoyed that bit. I really did.
Do you think that's...
As in taking part in the training, I feel that could kind of, you know, work hand in hand with adoption, actually, in some ways.
That was
obviously
my question,
it'd have to be a little bit different, but yeah.
So it's structurally, isn't it?
I feel the choice was... Yeah. I have to say the choice of things I could do were kind of restricted. So it was, you know, there was stuff around therapy and... I think there was did we do oh, what's that called? Oh God, first aid. That's the one. First aid. But beyond that, there was nothing.
The thing with the bandages and the body in the room.
Yeah, and keeping people alive. Yeah. I can't get my words out tonight. I don't know what's wrong with me. But beyond that, there was nothing really that kind of really interested me. And I think that, you know, what Harvey said about professionalism or classing foster care as professionalism is kind of, well, it's a debatable topic, isn't it? Some people see it one way, some people say it another. But actually, in terms of the opportunities through the training, I just felt that, you know, some of it was quite basic. And if you have been fostering for 20 years, what would you get out of something like that? You know, I mean, I hadn't fostered for 20 years, so it didn't affect me like that, but I had been an adoptive parent for 7 years, so I've done quite a lot through that.
And there's an element of you having to do the core training, isn't there? So you've done that, you do the core training, and then that's on a kind of a cycle of maybe 2 or 3 years, and then you're back to the start again. If some people have been foster carers for 12 years, and blimey,
donkeys.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
That I think I meant to ask last week was, why did you choose to go with it? You can't ask me.
No.
Can I ask you a different question that's slightly similar?
No, go on.
Why did you choose to go with a private foster care agency? Because I went with my local authority. We should have a fight, question. Harry Hill style.
Very good question. Yeah. Well, there was one main reason. So where we live, we have a unitary local authority who we adopted through, and we have our county local authority as well. So we live in the county, but the unitary is 10 miles away, and we adopted through them. And at the time when we went through the fostering, I actually sat on the fostering panel and adoption panel with the unitary authority. So I couldn't really, and I knew everybody on it, and I knew the chair and, you know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. So it wasn't, you know, I knew all the social workers who came and presented cases to panels and all that sort of stuff. So that wasn't, and the local authority, so the county, if you like, it's a really tricky question to answer because I don't want it to make it sound like they're not good. I just don't know that we would have fitted in with them given our experience of when we approached them about adoption. Bearing in mind there's a number of years in between, but our experience of them when we approached them about adoption wasn't positive in terms of times and things like that. So
I guess
that kind of put us off a little bit. And then
keeps going.
Yeah, and then, you know, we just decided to go private.
I mean, that's fair enough. And people often ask me, you know, would you foster again? If you did, how would you do it? And I think, I mean, I work for a private foster care agency, but I would definitely go private. And the difference is it's a market economy. You've got to be good. You've got to look after your carers. You've got to be, you know, if you don't, you know, if someone applies to a foster, you've got to get back them because they're a resource. And
yeah,
so it, there's a slightly different ethos, whereas I think sometimes local authorities are kind of a much more inevitability of people coming to you. And also that I think one of the other subtle things is that a local authority can be as good or as bad as it wants to be. It still has to look after children. Mm. It's still got that statutory duty.
Yeah, that's the thing as well.
Whereas we fall or rise on the quality of our care, which is probably right. Mm. That should be the case as well.
And I think that, and I think it's the same anywhere, isn't it? It's the same in any job, any role. You know, you've got your good, really good, people doing the job, and I'm talking about foster carers here.
Yeah,
and they represent, you know, the organisations, and but you have no influence over that organisation and how it works, especially when it comes to something, you know, as important as looking after children, which, you know, I think that was another reason why we decided to go private fostering as well, mm-hmm. because we knew that it's going to sound wrong, but to get the contracts for these local authorities, they have to be really good. And you know, that to me is, you know, I wouldn't have wanted to be associated with an organization that maybe wasn't so good.
That's reasonable. I think obviously that the landscape varies from literally street by street, because you could be in a local authority that's excellent or not so. You could find yourself with an agency that's a private agency that's not good or ticking along, or, you know, it's got. I'm reluctant to generalise because I know people who do work with local authorities and.
Yeah, I know.
Like Blair, I think the local authority he works for are excellent. You know, like everywhere, there's good, there's good and bad spots within that, but it's a mixed message. Was there anything else that Harvey said? He talked a bit about procurement, but that's a bit kind of business end of it all, isn't it? I'm not sure we want to talk about that.
But you know, procurement goes over into, well, in both adoption and fostering, doesn't it? And
placing, yeah.
And when I say procurement, and it's a tricky one to cover, because you know, I think that it just is, and whether it's services or placing children, procurement to me is rather, it's one of those challenging things, shall we say, that actually.
Well, I mean, I think I know what you're alluding to. I know what you're alluding to, and I agree with you. It's like all of this system, people are making money out of fostering. People are making money out of fostering agencies. People are making money out of ensuring that good links are made. And I guess it's the quality of that. I mean, I think I wrote a blog about a little bit about this, about I was on duty last year. I wasn't on duty. I was leaving the office at 5 o'clock and there was a referral came in for a child. And it was, you know, it's the dead end of Friday, and as a fostering agency we have no duty, and it turned out we had no one who could meet that need. And I just thought, there's some poor person, this placement officer, is going to have to find a place for this child. And in an ideal world, it would be a Monday morning, we'd all sit down as professionals and we'd go, what are the needs of the child and what are the capacity of the foster carers, all of those things that you would do in adoption. But right then, 5 o'clock on a Friday night, we need a bed. You kind of go, and that's where you hear these narratives around languishing in care, and you go, we don't live in that world where you can have a team meeting and think about where best to put children. It's complicated.
Yeah, sadly, neglect and abuse doesn't just stick to 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, does it? That's no. Hard.
No, and you look at the timings of when children come into care, and it's never convenient. It's never good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to dwell on it because this is our second podcast in 2 weeks. Blimey.
I know. Yeah, I know. We are.
Glitter nails will be happy.
We are on fire.
The one question...
If she can hear it.
If she can hear... Can you hear, pet? Can you? Where's your ear trumpet? Anyway.
Maybe. I think what it is, it's her nail varnish. It affects her mobile signal, so she can actually hear it. I think that's what it is.
Right, excellent.
So maybe if she took her nail varnish off, she'd be a bit better. Yeah. There you go. A bit of feedback for glitter nails then.
Excellent. I do have one question for you. What's you up to now?
Oh, look at the smile on your face. It's like, this is just the highlight of your week. It's disgusting. Hashtag, what's you up to now?
What? Well, tell me.
I had a brief discussion about it on Twitter earlier. Oh.
What?
He's up to a number of things.
The high point
but
of my
of
week.
Some of it's really interesting.
Some of it is very important. And probably... impactful and changing lives for the good. But what did we see on Facebook this week, Scott?
Well, what did we see on Facebook in hashtag what's Hugh up to now? So this week on Facebook, Hugh tweeted a video. And the video was just, it really just drew me in big time. And as you can tell from Al's giggling, so basically the video, oh dear, we've lost him, he's gone. The video was Hugh's pantry. He'd been reorganising his pantry. That's what Hugh's been up to now. I might actually try and get a screenshot of that just to prove that he did actually do a video of it. Because it was hilarious. And just it just popped up. I can't even remember where it was. It just popped up on Facebook when I just was having a quick look, see what was going on in the world. And there was this video of Hugh's pantry and the fact that he's reorganized and cleaned. And, it looked amazing.
I mean, what it's made me do is really look again at my pension and think that I really need to kind of up my payments so that I can... still have enough life left in me to reach such lofty, exciting, stimulating activities.
At that age as well. Yeah, I totally agree. But I think he's also been doing some really useful work this week as well. I don't think he's just been sitting in front of his pantry all week.
Yeah.
Because I know that he's been doing some work around the organisation that he's chair of trustees for.
Yes. Proper work.
Because they're having a...
meaningful, enduring,
lasting I still think he's just having... I'm still sure he's just having a little break, you know? He's just having a little holiday.
A little pause.
And he'll be back shortly.
He will.
I'm sure.
Well, thank you for that riveting episode of what you were doing there. I feel much better now.
Thank you for your giggles.
I've got a slight ache in my chest.
It's very funny.
Yeah. Scott, I hope you have a fantastic week. And I hope that everything you aspire and hope to just goes beautifully. And your children play nicely. And the sun shines and everything.
Do you know what? Now you've said that, you've jinxed it, haven't you? Because this week has just been amazing. They've all been fantastic this week.
Excellent. Are they on different continents?
You've just gone and jinxed it now as we come up to the weekend. Thank you. No, they're all in the same house, actually.
Excellent. Well, long may it last, and perhaps we'll follow up on that on what's happened in Scott's house, our new feature. No.
That's not.
No, we'll not go there.
Have a good week, Carl.
And you. Stay well and look after yourself. You're an absolute star.
Andrew.